Hello all, and welcome to a three-part podcast mini-series from Steps to Investing and our partners at Alliance Trust, where we are going to focus on the benefits of being a patient long-term investor. Throughout the series, we're going to speak to a mixture of some real-life private investors as well as a professional and touch upon different aspects of the investing experience, getting started, dealing with some of those anxieties that can come with having your hard-earned cash running around in the stock markets, some strategies for investing efficiently, and ultimately, the benefits of leaving your investments to do their thing and investing for the long term. In episode one, we're going to speak to Moira O'Neill, a private investor, to find out about her experience and the lessons she learnt along the way. Moira, a very warm welcome to you.
Hello.
So shall we start by you describing a little bit about yourself and your family life?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in my 40s. I have a young, not that young a family. My kids are both at secondary school now. We've had a fairly comfortable life. We've had some ups and downs along the way. We finally got to the point where we actually live in a house in London. So the teenager has got some space to bring her friends round. But yeah. For ages, we lived in a fairly small flat. We had a very cosy, lovely family life and dreamt of a house. But it's been nice to achieve that finally.
Okay, brilliant. So when did you first learn about investing?
So I learned about it, I was lucky enough to learn about it on the job, because I did start as a financial journalist, and I've done that for 25 odd years. So I had the pleasure of learning, starting on a pensions magazine. So pensions loomed large in my life at a very early age, in at 22. It's been brilliant. I'm not sure I would have learnt so much about it if I hadn't done it for a living. So I'm very grateful for that. So now I'm at the point of, you know, in my late 40s, I've got a lot of friends who are finally asking me some deep questions about this stuff, and realizing that retirement isn't that far away, and slightly panicking about what they're going to do about that. Mm-hmm. So that's been interesting. Mm-hmm. I think back in my 20s, if I tried to have a conversation about pensions and investings with a personal friend, then it would have been, you know, they often got just so bored and rolled their eyes, you know what I mean?
Of course. I'm interested, actually. So when you're talking to your friends about this, do they find it, the sort of concepts around investing, difficult to get their heads around, or is it much simpler than they kind of expect?
I think it's a confidence thing. I mean, most of the people I've spoken to have been women, and they have been women who have, you know, worked freelance or taken time out for kids, or just not got to grips with the important, you know, saving in a pension business. Mm-hmm. And they're desperate to learn. They just don't know where to start. And they keep saying, oh, I saw this thing advertised on the side of a bus. Do you think it's any good? Or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They're very into sort of, they're aware of the brands that are out there, but they've got no way to navigate this new world of financial services and investing.
Mm-hmm. I suppose there's a few different components when you're learning about it, from sort of like the basics and then the platforms and then the investments that kind of go in those accounts that you tend to open at the platform.
I mean, I have been round with my with a bottle of wine and my PowerPoint and had a go at that, and they did listen for at least 20 minutes.
Okay, good. Well done, 20 minutes. Okay. So let's get on to some of your financial goals, really, that you were thinking about. And you've had some longer term ones. Do you want to explain a bit about what these are?
Yeah, well, longer term, my husband's almost 10 years older than me. So I always thought longer term, I'd really like to be in a position to retire when he does. I'm looking at mid 50s retiring rather than mid 60s like most people do. So that's always been an ambition. And, you know, that would be not necessarily the cliff edge of retirement, but the ability to downscale, have some flexibility to do whatever he wants to do in his retirement and do that with him. I've been investing for my kids as well, because I always thought they need something behind them for university. So we've done the My kids were the Child Trust Fund generation originally, so they've moved to Junior ISAs since. But it's we've steadily built up funds for them that way. But I've also been conscious that I mustn't give them too much, and I must think about my own goals. I think that's where women come a bit unstuck sometimes, particularly mothers who want to give their kids everything. You know, you really want to make sure that you're funding your own ISA before you fund the kids, and so that you can use that flexibility as you wish. I could always give it to them at some point if I was in the position to do that. So that's investing for kids. The other thing that happened with us, as I've mentioned before, was the flat. We were living in a flat. It was lovely when the kids were little. They had ample space and it didn't seem to matter. But once you get teenagers who need their own room, who want to bring their friends round, we wanted a bit more space. We're in London. House prices seem to run away. And I was always thinking I need to invest in my ISA, because at some point, you never know, we might be able to buy a house. Let's see if it ever happens. It did happen about 4 years back. And so I had ended up cashing in.
Right, okay.
So I had my investments and then I suddenly didn't have any apart from my pension. So that's been interesting for me as a keen investor to suddenly have to cash it all in.
Okay. So let's focus a little bit on then the pension. Is this a self-invested personal pension?
Yes, it is. Yeah. I mean, I have a couple of old workplace pensions that I've left to where they were because there were certain conditions attached to them that I felt was important to keep them. So, for example, they had some guarantees in the small print, or there was also a ability to dip into them a bit earlier in the terms and conditions. I mean, that's very important if you're thinking of consolidating all your pensions, to make sure that you do read the small print attached to those old schemes. So I haven't consolidated everything, but I have most of it in a self-invested personal pension where I have control over the investments and I can pick and choose what I want and monitor it.
So this is a government incentivized wrapper, that's correct, right? And it enables you just to put investments into it. You get some tax relief on the money that you put into it, and then it's also tax free, right?
Absolutely, yes. And you can spend as much or as little time as you want managing it. I mean, mine is I'm not a trader. I'm a long-term investor. I like to buy and hold things for the very long term. And also, I've been very keen on drip feeding my money in. So out of income, I've been putting it in every month and, gradually building up my pension over time. And that has allowed me to just not worry so much, to know that if I'm putting in the same amount every month, sometimes I'll be buying things, when the market dips, sometimes I'll be buying them when the market is not looking as great for me as a buyer, but overall it averages out.
And that's quite a good idea. Okay, well, we'll get on to that in a little bit. I just want to focus on, so you had this long-term goal around retirement. You then chose some investments. You went for some collectives. Was there a reason for why you went for a pooled investment fund?
Well, I think I've always tended to invest in collectives. I have some tracker funds, which I think are a great way for people to start. So they just deliver the return of the stock market on average for you. And you can do that at really low cost. And you can see that they're good to drip feed money in. But I also like to sort of turbo boost my money a bit as well by investing in a type of collective investment that's professionally managed called an investment trust.
Right, okay.
And I learned about investment trusts probably in my mid to late 20s. I became really aware of those.
The best kept secret
in
the city.
Yeah. I think, and they really are, they're not advertised so much, but if you look at them and you look at the amazing growth that they have delivered, say over particularly periods like 10 years plus, you can really see them coming into their own. I just thought, I need to learn about these and I need to get some of them into my own investments. So that's been interesting, and I've been very pleased with how that's turned out for me. I think I've liked to collect a few, you know, I think I've always held at least 10 different funds in my portfolio. Sometimes it's been more than that, sometimes it's been less, but
so that's just to diversify some of the risks that you might get with an individual fund, an individual manager, a certain style, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's not only important to diversify between different types of investments and funds that do slightly different things or invest in different sectors or geographies. I think it's also quite important to invest in different fund management groups as well. So you're not taking on the risk of just one fund manager or one company, you know. I think that was pretty important to me. So yeah, I've always had a bit of a nice spread in there.
And what is it about investment trusts that you think is so good? What features are particularly appealing?
Well, I really like the fact that they're managed by boards, independent boards, which have the end shareholder, i.e. me, my interests at, you know, at heart. And, you know, that's a great comfort as an investor, that you know that if the fund manager wasn't delivering, that board, you would hope, would be doing something about it and looking to replace the fund manager. And also, you know, they're accessible, you can go and hear from them, you know, who's running this. But the other thing that is great about investment trusts is their ability to gear, so to borrow, to invest. And I think, you know, sounds risky, doesn't it, borrowing to invest? But, you know, they're professional fund managers. They can make that call when they, you know, when they think it's going to be worth doing. And, you know, I've always thought I'm holding these investments for at least 10 years. If anything goes wrong, there's time for it to come good again. And the other interesting thing for me about investment trusts is the ability to buy them at a discount to the underlying value of the portfolio.
Right. Okay.
So then if you spot that it's trading at a bargain price, you can buy in, and I think that's fascinating. So occasionally, in my investing career, I've been a bit cash heavy or something, and I've been able to sort of go out there bargain hunting and see what I should be, you know, putting a bit extra in addition to the regular drip feeding of my investments that I do every month. So. That's quite fun to be able to think, you know, I'm getting in at a good time and a good price.
And that's because they are closed pools of capital, which means the shares of the trust are separated from that pool of capital and they're traded on the stock exchange. And sometimes we go through periods where certain sectors, certain styles, whatever it is, that for some reason that trust might fall out of favour a little bit. And that's why those shares can fall to a discount to the value of those assets within that pool of capital, right?
Yeah.
So you can get these kind of extra little boosts from buying at a discount and then that discount closing a little bit or even going to a premium, right?
Yeah. I was talking to my husband recently about investment trusts because I want him to get started investing this. He used to invest in direct stocks a long time ago, and he hasn't done much since. And he said to me, "So what are these collective investment things?" And I said, "Well, you know, you used to look at investment trusts," and I gave him a few names to go and look at and a few videos with the managers of the funds to see, because that's nice when you can see the whites of the eyes of the person who's managing and hear them speak. I think that inspires confidence. And I did say, he said then went, "Well, how do I actually buy these?" And I said, "Well, it's exactly the same as buying your stocks, your shares that you used to do, your company shares. You know, they have a ticker. It's very simple. You say how much you want to buy on your platform and you press buy, you know, and job done." He said, "Really?" But yeah, it's as easy as that. And if you want to sell, same process.
So, yes, yeah. You just have to imagine the same as any other share of any
exactly.
company. It's just that company, all it does is invest in other shares.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Interesting. So, and you've mentioned about drip feeding money into it. Have you seen the benefits of doing that versus, I suppose, timing the market and putting in a lump sum?
I haven't calculated it, so I can't give you any maths evidence, but I do know that it's been easier mentally, you know, and to be an investor, being a regular investor, than it has been to think, oh, is now a good time to buy, and I've got a big lump sum of cash sitting there, and I'm going to dither about it. I think just saying, committing to every month, putting some money in, I'm doing the same every month, it is a really good discipline, and stops you fretting about it. So that's the main benefit to me. I'm sure the maths have been good, but I've been a growth investor, and that pound cost averaging can be really great if you are building up your funds as a growth investor.
Yeah, I mean, I think because it's this idea that over time, long periods of time, markets go up. So rather than actually worrying about where a market is at any point, just if you just drip feed in, then you'll just get that kind of smooth return over the long term, if you're investing over the long term, of course.
And it's very comforting every now and then to just remind yourself of that, to go and look at a long-term graph of the stock market and say, yeah, okay, everything looks horrendous at the moment. I don't know, war's broken out, or whatever else is going on, whatever the Chancellor's done, or, you know, and just say, well, look at that. It, over time, it's gone up, and that graph looks very nice, and that curve looks very nice. I think you have to be optimistic to be an investor. I think you have to just believe it's going to come good. And all the evidence you have in the past about, you know, shows that it will. We always say there's no guarantees, are there? You know, you can't guarantee that the future's going to be the same as the past. So what else do you have to go on?
Of course. I just wanted to get on to the sort of feelings you've had over the years. So when you started investing, were you nervous about putting your money into the stock market?
Don't think I was, because I was fairly young and I knew that, you know, I had like 40 years on to retiring. And I knew that, you know, my research had told me that over those very long periods, it's very likely to be okay. And I always put money into the pension. I think the tax relief that you get up front on the pension is such a big free money giveaway that it makes, you know, be daft not to use that, because not only do you get the tax relief from the government, I mean, I was getting most of the time I've been employed, I've been getting a boost from my own employer as well to my pension. So why would I turn that down? And I think that, because that gives you such a head start as an investor, it gives you a bit of comfort that, you know, you're doing the right thing.
Okay, that's a really interesting thing. And then, you know, over the period of time that you've been invested, there would have been the global financial crisis when all hell broke loose in the stock markets, really. How did that feel? Did you panic then?
I didn't panic about my investments. I think I might have put a bit more in, although I didn't have megabucks at the time. But I would have put, you know, a couple of thousand in or something. I actually had a bit of a horrible thing happen to me with my savings.
Right.
Because I had my savings, which was actually my family's emergency cash fund.
Right.
In iSave, which is one of the banks that went bust and had to be rescued by the government.
Right.
So I had quite a worrying 3 months where I didn't know where that big chunk of money had gone, and I wasn't entirely sure I was going to get it back. I did get it back, but I think that was a warning to me not to chase really high interest rates in banks anymore. Right. You know, to make sure that, you know, I stayed within the financial services compensation scheme limits, spread my money around. I think all of those lessons were learned the hard way from my point of view. I think my husband was like in complete disbelief that I'd done that. He was like, you're supposed to know this stuff. How did you let that happen? And I was like, well, hindsight is a wonderful thing. You know, nobody expected banks to go bust all over the shop. Probably a few financial gurus will say that they predicted it. But I mean, for the vast majority of us, we did not expect that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that made me slightly more cautious overall, but it didn't really affect the long-term plan.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Do you want to explain just what the financial services compensation scheme means?
Yeah, sure. So this is, from a point of view of your savings in the bank or building society, it offers a deposit guarantee. So the first £85,000 of your money saved up or in your current accounts or wherever it is with your bank is protected in the event of that institution going bust. And there are similar protections that apply to investments, although it's not quite the same. But, you know, I think anyone who's got their money on a big, robust investment platform shouldn't really worry too much, because your money's held in trust for you. It's not, it doesn't go on the balance sheet of that company. It is yours. So I think, you know, there's some comfort there.
Mm. But that doesn't protect you against the fall in the value of investments,
no,
of course.
No, not at all. No, that's the main risk you face as an investor.
Yeah, okay. And would you say then, just going back to the sort of when markets fall and that you obviously had that the global financial crisis there. I mean, what would you say is the best approach when that happens? I mean, you said you put more money in. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, I mean, I love the quotes that you have from Warren Buffett, who's like the sage of Omaha, or the guru, sort of, you know, when, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. So when you see the world around you looking pretty scary in terms of the markets, quite often a good time to get in. And I would say that's easy to do when you're in your 20s and 30s, because you can see that there's a long way to go. It's probably harder to do the closer you get to the point where you need your pension and you need your money. Because I could see my own father, actually. He used to be a really active investor in investment trusts, and now he's in retirement. He's actually handed over the management of his money to a financial advisor.
Okay.
So he's gone from being a really active DIY investor to wanting the comfort of having a professional holding his hand. He's not, once you stop earning an income, you can become a lot more cautious about your money.
Of course. And that's one of the things with having a long-term view, is you can afford these swings in the market because you won't need that cash right now. But as you get closer to your financial goal, you have to reduce that risk a bit, because, of course, as you say, if you need an income, you can't afford to have it suddenly drop 20% in value, can you?
Yes.
And of course, I suppose as your financial affairs get a bit more complex, which they can around retirement, that's when it can be a good idea to seek financial advice, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Particularly if you need tax advice, because that's where it comes into its own as well.
Okay, interesting. I suppose just to sort of finish things off then, what tips would you give those who are, you know, perhaps worried about some of those ups and downs, thinking about starting, especially at the moment, you know, we've got pretty dreary markets at the moment. What advice would you give?
Well, I think the important thing is to get started, because there's nothing worse than, you know, leaving it 6 months or a year and missing out on some potential big gains. And I think there's always going to be a reason not to invest because you can always see something out there in the world that makes you feel hesitant, or your taxi driver tells you it's not a good idea, or another friend says, oh, I got badly burnt or something. And I think you just got to get started. And if you get started with money that you can afford to put away for 10 years at least, that, and you can drip feed that in gradually on a monthly basis, that's a really sensible thing to do with your money. The other thing that I think people really need to focus on is keeping costs low. So make sure that the platform you hold your money on has is low cost. Make sure the investments that you choose aren't too expensive. And just, you know, that is one of the key things you can control as an investor. You can't control the markets, but you can control how much you're paying. So I think it's very important.
And of course, I mean, you know, there's no such thing. I've seen a lot of press that goes towards this active or passive kind of arguments, but actually, often a blend of all these things is a good idea. It kind of reduces risks in anyone, and it gives you a blended cost that as you say, is quite low.
Yeah, I mean, I've got probably about 50-50 blend in mind. I've got half in, you know, very low cost global tracker funds. And I've got about half of it in investment trusts and things that are a bit more exciting. So that's the way I've gone. I'm not saying it's the best way or anything, but I know that overall my costs are low. I know that I've got the market return, and I also know I've got the potential for my portfolio to grow faster than the market because I've got these amazing investment trusts in there. And I've been happy with that. There's plenty of other ways to do it.
And I suppose that's part of the excitement.
Yeah.
Okay, well, on that note, a very big thank you to Moira for joining me on the pod today. Next time in episode 2, we're going to speak to an investment professional to dig a little bit deeper into why we invest for the long term. If you've got any questions, please don't hesitate to drop me a line at marcus@stepstoinvesting.com. Until then, goodbye.